I'm gonna call it
Thanos, more like pathos. 3, 2, 1. All right, well, so here we are.
10 years later.
Culmination of, is it even a comic company anymore?
I believe they are an entertainment conglomerate.
I mean, it's a real question. Is it even a comic company anymore? Do they, what would happen if we took their comics away? Would they be like, meh?
Yeah, that's true.
They did their job. They got us there. Twice in 1 month, we've left the house.
You think you're the only superhero in the world? Mr. Stark, you become part of a bigger universe. You just don't know it yet.
The Avengers. That's what we call ourselves. Sort of like a team. Earth's mightiest heroes type thing.
Every time someone tries to win a war before it starts, innocent people die. Every time.
The brutality, the sacrifice, it changes you. I'd rather be a good man than a great king.
Once you've won, once you're king of the mountain, what happens to his mind?
He's flying. We're fighting an army of robots. And I have a bow and arrow. None of this makes sense.
Hulk smash! Dread it. Run from it. Destiny still arrives.
Evacuate the city. Engage all defenses. And get this man a shield.
Fun isn't something one considers when balancing the universe. But this... does put a smile on my face.
Good evening to you, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Nighthawks Podcast, a cinema-centric podcast. For those of you who like to stay up late and after midnight into the wee hours, sipping black cups of coffee and eating glutinous pies while discussing films, and we hope to recreate that imagery for you here. Yeah.
Hey, if you're gluten-free or you like a little cream and sugar in your coffee, you're still welcome.
Yeah, you can still hang out with us.
Don't be hardcore.
And who are you?
My name is Matt. I'm the other guy. What's your name?
My name is Trevor, and I am the guy, but also the other guy. Because we are equal guys.
We are the other guys.
Yeah.
We are actually both three kids in a coat.
And we're here to do a business. The business we are doing today is recording a podcast on a current release. We are going to be talking about Avengers Infinity War here in just a few moments. But, you know, something that we're kind of getting into the habit of doing is we want to talk to each other. You know, Matt and I, we used to talk on the phone for hours at a time. But now that our lives have gotten a little crazy, we don't have nearly as much time to catch up. Matt, how are you?
I'm all right.
You doing okay? What have you been watching lately? What have you been up to?
What have I been watching? What have I been? Obviously, The Expanse, which I plug over and over. But let's not talk about that.
Man, there's a lot of good science fiction stuff just hitting Netflix at random. It's almost hard to keep up with now. You know, it's weird. I was going through my Netflix history just to kind of prep myself for talking about what we've been up to. And it's really sad that I can actually tell you what I've been up to by looking at my Netflix history. But I can. And I am in the middle of my annual The Office and Parks and Recreation binge. This is a perennial thing. It's an ongoing thing. I'm usually watching one or the other. And I find that a lot of people do this. I'll start basically at the beginning of The Office. I'll watch all 120 seasons of that there were. Once I'm done with that, if I need a little pick-me-up, so I'll binge watch Parks and Rec. And then once Parks and Rec is over, it's been a sufficient amount of time that I can go back to the first season of The Office and start watching it again. But it's weird, those two shows have a lot in common, but I think they come from really different places. Like, The Office to me is a bunch of people who are miserable, who hate the people they work with, and are just trying to slog through and make a life for themselves. Now, yeah, granted, by the end of the series, everybody's kind of getting real friendly and chummy, but for the most part, that's what that seems like. Parks and Rec, on the other hand, is a group of friends who genuinely love each other, who genuinely love their job, banding together to do some common good. And so I think they work well as kind of a yin and yang. You've got your kind of emo, depressive, The Office, hey man, I feel ya, I'm just trying to get through the day too. And then you've got the optimistic Parks and Rec, which is, hey, let's get together with some people we like and do stuff that we like.
Yeah, I like both of those, but I don't, I'm not a big re-binger guy. I don't get too into that.
You know, I'm not either, but those two shows just kind of seem to be strong enough that they'll hold up to multiple rewatches. For me, anyway. I'm not speaking for anybody else, but...
Got some new seasons dropped of Happ and Leonard, the great kind of weird 70s Southern noir.
Yeah, James Purefoy, Michael K. Williams, Christina Hendricks, Jimmy Simpson. You actually talked me into a couple episodes of that, and I was pretty into it. I just have not had a ton of time because I'm busy watching Parks and Rec and The Office, which is not a good excuse.
It's not your mandate. Like, your reason to twat is not to finish television, is it? Is it?
Oh, my God.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
Is that why? Is that why we're here?
Oh, my God. Yes, God.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Not unlike the Alex Jones robot, we are cursed with our reason to live.
What is my purpose?
Also coming up, actually, I think just wrapped up this week, was CinemaCon out in Las Vegas, which is a big, I guess you'd call it an industrial convention for like theater owners, presenters, things like that. They debut a lot of content here, announce a lot of projects. They bring the stars out, kind of tout them around to, you know, shake hands and rub elbows with the theater exhibitors. One of the things that they showcased was, and we never miss an opportunity to bring this gentleman up, is Shane Black. They have shown the first footage of his new The Predator film, which is a sequel, reboot, something along those lines. It is an entry into the Predator franchise. My guy on the ground, shout out to friend of the podcast, Sean, said he wasn't overall that impressed with what he saw. Some of the Twitterverse disagrees. I don't know. What I'm hearing has me a little standoffish, but this is another one I'm going to buy the ticket to just on principle.
Like I guess it's like, you know, the Supreme Court's definition of obscenity. We know bad effects when we see them, but I'm a little bit like this react, which the trailer itself hasn't quite trickled out yet, so it's people's hot take that we're discussing. And then the Venom trailer, where some people are like, oh, that looks exactly how Venom looks in my head. And other people are like, it looks like he's a plastic or something. It really seems everything now catches people hot and cold. But I thought the Venom looked okay in the Venom trailer. What am I being promised here? Predators?
Sure. The cast includes Boyd Holbrook, Olivia Munn, Sterling K. Brown, Keegan-Michael Key, of course, Jacob Tremblay, who was kind of a smash success in Room, not The Room, but Room, as the young protagonist of the film. I guess what I'm led to understand is that these predators in this movie have enhanced themselves with DNA from other species, which once you start getting into...
We genetically modified them to be bigger, better, stronger.
That's usually when a franchise loses me.
So it's like Deep Blue Sea, but with predators.
Right. But yeah. I am so on board for a Shane Black Predator movie. Another Shane Black Predator movie. This time he's writing and directing. So, I mean, I'm already in on principle. We'll see how the trailer pans out when it comes out. But a little hot and cold coming out of CinemaCon.
I'm going to give it a chance, but I liked Predators more than most people seem to. So.
Yeah, I did too. I was actually quite fond of it. Walton Goggins for the win. All right. So, folks, we're not here to bore you to death with our hot takes on trailers we haven't seen. What we're actually here to do today is talk about the latest big budget, big franchise, tentpole blockbuster film currently on pace to probably break a few records. We're talking about Avengers Infinity War, the culmination of 10 years of Marvel films, unless you want to start talking about what comes after this, and then it's not really a culmination, it's more of just another step on the way. What we're going to do here, because this is a new film, because it's a current release, and because people have been particularly stodgy about spoilers for this movie specifically, we're going to do our standard general discussion that does not include spoilers. We're going to speak very broadly on it, and on this we're going to have to speak very broadly, and then we will give you an audible, obvious spoiler curtain to which, if you don't want any spoilers, you can turn off the show, go listen to something else. If you have seen the movie or you don't care about spoilers, you can join us behind the spoiler curtain for our full discussion. Matt, spoilers are kind of a big thing for this one.
I don't know. Some people's sense of a spoiler is like, is so-and-so in it, or is someone not pictured in the trailer in the movie? I don't know the degree to which we can tiptoe around that kind of thing. If you could find it out through a casual glance at the IMDb page, I don't know if I consider it a spoiler.
Yeah.
But some things go down here.
A lot of things go down, yeah.
Bad things happen in this one. It's not an Infinity dust-up. It's not an Infinity scuffle.
This is Infinity War. War never changes. When it comes to spoilers, how are you? I mean, what is your hot take with spoilers? How do you deal with spoilers? Do you mind spoilers?
I usually deal with them by seeing movies early and often, because like one of my friends, I was like, have you seen it yet? He's like, dog, it's 10 o'clock on Tuesday or on Thursday. How have you? And I'm like, I handle my business. And then someone else was like, it takes me like $150 to go to the movie, 'cause I have, you know, four spawn.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I get that too. I'm on top of it enough. I did have one person on my Facebook who was in the Netherlands, so he did some cheating. Not only did he have the benefit of like the 18 time zones or whatever, but then he also, I believe his showing was like a military screening.
Oh, kind of an early thing, yeah.
So he saw it Tuesday. Shout out to BJ Bradley, actual Captain America. If he's listening. I think other than that, I saw it before it could be spoiled for me.
How do you react then when like somebody just drops one on you and it's, you haven't seen the movie yet, or it's something you're really looking forward to?
Depends on the nature of the movie. Like most of the time, like a sort of expected death of a B character, that sort of thing, doesn't usually bother me that much. If it's a real unraveler, like if it's the twist at the end of a What a Twist movie, I don't appreciate that. You know, actually Dumbledore was dead the whole time. That's why only Bruce Willis can learn magic from him.
Rosebud was the guy's sled.
And I understand, like, it's also like a social media thing too. Like some people just can't, if they're hopping up and down and they can't contain themselves, it's a little different than it's someone I chose to interact with. That's a little different than if it's a critic and they spoil it in a review. I'm like, I'm pretty lukewarm on that, which is, but you know, I think why we try to avoid it here. How do you react to it? Do you become increasingly furious?
it ticks me off, and I'm actually pretty militant about, like, if a friend of mine posts he hasn't seen yet, or you know, he posts the Liam Neeson meme about if you spoil Infinity War, I will find you and I will kill you. I had a friend of mine post one of those, and like his friend actually hopped in the comments section, not with a legitimate spoiler for Infinity War, but it was framed as such. And through deduction, you can kind of say, well, yeah, I get it that he's joking. But if you actually think about it, it'll tell you something about the movie. So I kind of jumped on that guy's case. Otherwise, you know, in public, if we're doing it at a table, I might say, hey, dude, come on. But I, much like being cooler online, I also get more angry online.
I'm actually both lamer and calmer online because they're related.
Getting to the meat and potatoes of Infinity War, here's our very broad stroke synopsis. Over the past 10 years, we've been watching the members of the Avengers grow and kind of come together in this formidable team. From the first Avenger fighting in World War II to Tony Stark freeing himself from captivity in the war-torn Middle East, now we have, for this movie, a broken and fractured team of superheroes. The Avengers are kind of scattered to the four winds. Some are here, some are there, some are in outer space. And then meanwhile, the great warlord Thanos, a 12-foot-tall purple menace, and his children are questing for the 6 Infinity Stones. Once collected, will allow the warlord Thanos to complete his life's work in the literal snap of a finger. His life work is, of course, to kill 50% of the population of the entire universe, leaving more for the half that's left. At least 2 of the stones are currently on Earth in the Marvel storyline to this point, so it's up to Earth's mightiest heroes to cooperate once again and stop Thanos before it's too late. However, there are other Infinity Stones on other worlds out in the galaxy, so we better call up the Guardians of the Galaxy to come in and help as well. And actually, the Marvel Universe needs all the help they can get. So, Matt, overall reactions, how did you feel about this one?
My overall reaction was pretty positive.
Yeah, I really liked it. I really did, too. I'm not going to say that it's the best Marvel movie. I think it's actually kind of far from that mark. But as far as any movie with Avengers in the title, this is the best by leaps and bounds. My apologies to Joss Whedon on that. Sorry, buddy, you tried. You had a decent movie and kind of a turd. This is the best Avengers movie. I don't know that I liked it better than Civil War, but it definitely pays off on what is promised. It delivers. I got everything I wanted, everything I asked for. Some things worked better than others, but we can talk about that in a minute. Yeah, overall, I was happy with my ticket price, and I'm frothing for a sequel. I'd say good movie delivered.
In generic terms, the praise I'll put on this is it certainly did a good job of getting off to the point with it integrated any exposition it needed to integrate, so there wasn't a lot of drag. This is a long movie, but it didn't feel long.
No, it didn't at all. It's 2 hours and 40 minutes, and I was catching it at a late show on a work night, and I was feeling pretty rough the next morning, but the entire time in the theater, I was pretty riveted.
It does a good job of cutting the cast up into manageable groups and flitting back and forth between the manageable groups in good time and making sure nobody lingers too long before we revisit them, and that their actions have a little bit of communication and sync up between them. They're all kind of ultimately working toward fighting on one field of battle there at the end. Fortunately, we're getting to the point where several of these people can just move around extremely fast. Thanos, Doctor Strange, Thor, they're all capable of extremely expedited travel, and that helps kind of with the notion that they're fighting in all these theaters at one time. They managed to make it play. I think that's the problem with some of the, definitely with Avengers 2, arguably with Civil War, is that they ended up being a little scattershot. I'll say, too, this gave the issue that I've always had with, like, the normies being a little bit, like, what are they there to do? Just sort of tap Thanos on the shoulder.
Yeah.
They did a good job with keeping them busy. I thought the action direction was well handled. I have design questions about Thanos, but they stem to his original design.
Actually, and I thought Thanos was a particularly well-realized effect. It was amazing to watch this giant, fully CGI character and still be able to see Josh Brolin in there, see that Josh Brolin performance behind the eyes of this entirely digital creature. Something superhero team-up movie that shall remain nameless at this point kind of failed to do with their big villain last year. We'll put a pin in that until a little bit later. We are looking at 10 years, a decade, a full decade, living in this particular shared continuity Marvel cinematic universe. We started in 2008 with Iron Man and the Incredible Hulk. 2 years later, we got Iron Man 2. In 2011, we got Thor. Also in 2011, we got Captain America, the First Avenger. That bled into 2012, the Mayan end of the world with The Avengers. Iron Man 3 came out in 2013, as well as Thor Dark World. The year following that, we had Captain America, the Winter Soldier. And we decided to take it out into space, get a little sci-fi Jack Kirby with it, and had the Guardians of the Galaxy also in 2014. Expanding out a little bit, not part of the combined Marvel universe, but it is a Disney-produced contemporary Marvel property. We also had Big Hero 6 drop in 2014. 2015 gave us the probably the worst movie of the bunch, Avengers Age of Ultron, and that's me speaking personally. I'm not speaking for Matt there. 2015 also gave us Ant-Man, which also wasn't my favorite. But the next year, we really kicked it into high gear with 2 of the ones that I quite enjoyed. Captain America Civil War in 2016, followed by Doctor Strange, written by a friend of the podcast, C. Robert Cargill. We also had, in 2017, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. We also had a co-production with Sony in the name of Spider-Man Homecoming. And we also had a theatrical presentation of the Inhumans television series, which I have to admit I have not watched.
Making you part of everybody.
We also had that year Thor Ragnarok. So 2017 was a big year for Marvel. And then this year, of course, we've had the exemplary Black Panther. And now we're on Infinity War. Matt, let's talk about the grander MCU to this point. Now, I know that they're kind of foggy. They've blended together a little bit. But do you have any favorites? Do you have any highlights? What's the best? What's the worst here?
My problem with the MCU is that I really see it as almost episodes of a show.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard for me to go like, I really liked Avengers 1 more than Avengers 2, because I always have a mind of like, for me, it's a set of portrayals. And for me, like, the reason like I don't downgrade Avengers 2 as hard as some people is because it had the Vision and Scarlet Witch I've been waiting for. It's kind of like I was instantly sold on the first Iron Man, because Iron Man himself, the suit, looks so good. And he was, and Robert Downey Jr. just is Tony Stark in real life. So there's no, you know.
I mean, it is hard to, and especially since some of these I haven't seen in a while. But I do know that, like, as far as fun had in the theater, I think all of them I had a good time watching. But I do know that I would probably put, say, Iron Man 2 and Avengers 2, you know, maybe like the first two Thor movies, probably pretty near the bottom of the stack. Whereas the top of the stack, I'd probably put Black Panther up there, Thor Ragnarok, Guardians of the Galaxy, Civil War I really enjoyed, Winter Soldier I really, really enjoyed. But yeah, I mean, overall, I think this is a grand experiment, and we can get into that a little bit later. But honestly, what the Marvel Cinematic Universe has effectively done is it made me care about a lot of comic book characters that I had no strong feelings about one way or the other. When I was coming of age in my comic book nascency, it was the 90s. I was really into the X-books. I was into the X-Men. I was into Wolverine. That was like the core thing. That was, and then like Captain America, Iron Man, the Avengers were kind of a second tier for me, and I didn't really follow them.
If I can wax nostalgic,
sure,
for a second. The first real Marvel MCU crossover thing I remember, They used to do what they called the annual, which was a long special at the end of the volume. So this is the first like annual set I tried to collect, and it was the Atlantis Attacks crossover. Probably not that good, but it did have that same effect of blending all the characters, and also it centered around that cosmic sort of ridiculous Marvel universe with the Titans and the Lemurians and the, you know. So it was a very strange crossover, and it was a real gotta go catch 'em all.
So, I mean, obviously this whole thing has been a big financial success. It's obviously doing very well for Disney. It's doing very well for Marvel. But has it been a success on all levels? I guess the chief questions here we're asking, are we down for more? And people keep talking about superhero fatigue and that it's just on the horizon that this big geek bubble is going to pop sometime. What's your read on that?
I don't think the geek bubble's going to pop. I think there's a little bit of people are probably ready for this one to be to come to an ending so they can do something else, right? There's fatigue in that sense.
Do you you mean like from the performer standpoint, like Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans?
I think so, and that is, I mean, it is a factor that the real people age faster than the characters.
Yeah.
Some of our favorite pulp detectives would be like 80, you know, or 90 if they were real, you know, and they're still writing novels about them. Eventually you do have to kind of recycle the cast and reboot a little bit. I hope where I get fatigue, I get origin fatigue. I get where I'm like, please do a Doctor Who and just be like, a new guy's going to play this guy.
Yeah.
Take that one thing away from like soap operas. Like we're just going to,
well, we have done that.
New stories.
We have done that in this series. For example, Ed Norton was the Incredible Hulk in the first MCU Incredible Hulk, which was already a reboot of the Eric Bana Hulk, and now we're sitting on Mark Ruffalo. So, I mean, changing horses midstream, they also did that with the character of Rhodey, who is now played by Don Cheadle, used to be played by Terrence Howard in Iron Man 1. So, I mean, it's not something that we're totally virginal to, but man, I think we'd lose something if somebody else stepped in as Tony Stark, like if a different actor played that character. But what I wouldn't mind seeing, and this is something that's supported in comic books, is if they do decide to start retiring some of these characters, maybe other characters in the universe will don the Iron Man armor. Maybe Rhodey will become the next Iron Man in the wake of Tony Stark, etc., etc. I do get a little bit of origin fatigue too, just as an audience member, in that I just don't want to sit through another origin story. The themes present in those are generally pretty universal, and we've seen a lot of that. We've seen multiple origins of the same character. To crib a little bit from the DC universe, if I have to see Thomas and Martha Kent die in Crime Alley again, I am going to go crazy and start fighting crime as a mass vigilante. There are so many times I can see those pearls and popcorn hit the sidewalk before I'm just going to slip.
It's not like there's not a way or three to work it in for the rare person that does not know the whole thing.
Right.
Particularly, the cinematic universe I feel has been worse served by it is actually Spider-Man.
Yeah. Actually, that brings me to, we have a bulleted question here. So we'll just slip into this and I'll let you finish. But there are other comic book worlds out there kind of operating as their own independent franchises. I was going to ask you kind of how the Disney Marvel universe stacked up to the other ones. The three big ones that I've identified, in addition to Disney Marvel, are the Warner Brothers DC Universe, which is our Justice League, Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. You've also got the Fox branch of the Marvel Universe, to this point has been totally independent from the Disney arm of the Marvel Universe, even though they're technically under the same umbrella now. But that universe includes like X-Men, Fantastic Four, and now Deadpool, which I guess you could kind of say is its own spinoff of X-Men. And then you've also got Sony, as you bring up, their three attempts at Spider-Man. We had the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man for three movies. We had Andrew Garfield for two. And then we have rebooted with Tom Holland now with Spider-Man Homecoming. And so, Matt, I'm sorry to walk on you. You were saying that you felt that Spider-Man has probably been the most misserved out of all of them.
I mean, overall, if you can compare what could be covered in the Spider-Man universe to what they have made it through in the movies, it's had the greatest kind of narrative disservice done to it by constantly rewinding it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas like the X-Men, Avengers, some of that stuff is somewhat episodic by nature. They fight a big bad and then another one comes.
Mm-hmm.
But Spider-Man is a character that changes a lot as he ages. So you have the high school Spider-Man, the college Spider-Man, the adult Peter Parker, then ultimately the kind of rebooted Spider-Man we have now. There's so much Spider-Man continuity and so little of it has made it onto screen. I happen to like the Tom Holland Spider-Man.
Yeah, I really did too. Overall, though, how is Disney Marvel stacking up against its competitors here?
I mean, clearly it's winning, right? And this is there's this accusation that there's a deep critical plot to undermine the DC universe.
Yeah, I don't know where that's coming from.
Well, it's coming mostly from, there's an entire, like I said earlier, I got some of these movies that aren't stacked up as well, I think are doing well because they deliver what they want. Like Man of Steel. I liked Man of Steel. It delivered what I wanted, which was a young Superman trying to find out about himself.
Mm-hmm.
And that made the rest of the movie for me, and I ignored the last act being a little off. I liked Michael Shannon as Zod. I thought that was a cool Zod.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes one characterization or something is enough. We saw with Suicide Squad, a legion of Harley Quinn fans rescued that movie. You know, you get a great Harley Quinn, you got a great Deadshot, and there wasn't a lot around them.
Right.
In our defense, when we really like something that is a little weakly framed, like we love the Judge Dredd movie. We thought it did everything it needed to do.
Now you're talking about the Carl Urban Judge Dredd, is that right?
I'm talking about both of them, of course, but we like the Carl Urban one. But it was a very stripped down movie. There are valid critical complaints with it. I mean, it was a Hong Kong action movie with Judge Dredd in it. I understand why it wasn't immediately greenlit for a sequel. I understand why it should have had one.
Mm-hmm.
The risk you take is that when something like Judge Dredd is obscure enough, if you take the no exposition, assume the fans know who it is approach, then you do risk leaving some people behind.
Right.
And so, and of course also...
Well, and I'll say that Infinity War is not the place to jump in. If you are not familiar with the Marvel Universe up to this point, this movie will not do anything for you.
Yeah, you definitely like... That's something I miss about there being a number in the title. When you went to Nightmare on Elm Street 3, it felt like it was okay to assume you'd seen 1 and 2, because you bought a ticket for 3.
Right.
There's a 3 on there.
Yeah. Third sequel advertised, third sequel delivered. Well, what I'll say, just looking down the list here, Warner Brothers DC has done some stuff that I liked. I am not one to just poop on the DC universe out of hand. I did like Wonder Woman. I did like Man of Steel. I didn't hate Batman versus Superman, but I didn't love it. And that was kind of my thing, is just overall walking out of the theater with a Warner Brothers DC movie, probably a little more than half of those films, I walked out going, eh. Well, I liked Harley Quinn, but man, I kind of regretting the price of my ticket. I think I was taken to Suicide Squad. I didn't buy a ticket, but it was one of those like, oh man, I wish that had been better. You know, as far as Fox and Marvel goes, I think the X-Men is probably the strongest contender against the Marvel DC universe. We had the first X-Men movie back in 2000, a couple of good sequels. We had a couple of not so good sequels. We had the absolutely fantastic Logan. Really managed to hang in there. I thought after about X-Men 3, X-Men United, and Wolverine Origins, we had probably lost Fox and they were kind of going down that rabbit hole. But they seem to have come back and they found a good stride with Deadpool now. I think they're going to be around for a while. Sony is really going in on all of the this kind of combined Spider-Man universe, but I happen to agree with you. I think Spider-Man is probably, this is their last shot. If they can't make this work, the public is not going to buy in on another Peter Parker origin story. And then, of course, you've got Disney and Marvel. They've got a whole television arm of things that don't necessarily reflect in the movies, but do take into account things that have happened in the movies. And with that, you've got a whole spectrum of things from the superior Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, Daredevil season one to the not so hot like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. season one. So really, it runs a gamut. I think I agree with you. DC Marvel is on top. I think they're probably going to stay there. As long as they keep doing what they're doing and letting filmmakers tell their stories the way they want to tell them. Or at least that's the impression I get. Overall, I think Fox has a pretty good foothold. If Sony can make this work, they're going to be doing okay too. DC Warner Brothers, come on guys. I'm rooting for you. I need another good movie out of you.
It does seem like a sign of hope that cooler heads are prevailing. Because they didn't just allow Spider-Man to have a cameo in these last couple. He's definitely actually in this movie.
Yeah.
That's a sign that, like, they really figured out, like, well, we could just give the fans what they want and charge a fee, and we'll all be okay. I do think the Tony Stark designed spider suit may force them to up their game.
Yeah.
You know, there may be a certain arms race there.
I do not know the degree to which the contractual obligations for the Spider-Man character... It's weird. Marvel had sold out all of its properties a long time ago before they were in the business of producing movies on their own. So that's why we've got Fantastic Four and X-Men over at Fox. Sony had Spider-Man. I mean, they were just kind of all over the place before Marvel said, okay, hang on. We're going to do this our way. We're going to quote unquote do it right. And some of those properties they could not get back, specifically Spider-Man and the X-Men. After two stabs at a Spider-Man franchise, Sony finally decided they'd play ball and give the fans what they want, let Spider-Man go play with the big boys. I think it did well for them, but I don't think those rights have reverted back to Disney Marvel fully. And this is just kind of a loaner program that they're experimenting with. There might be an opportunity for Sony to say, hey, you can't use our character anymore. Thanks for the jumpstart. We've got it from here, which I think would be a fatal mistake. But it's certainly something that's on the table, and it's something that people are a little worried about.
Studio heads change, and there's always a chance for a misstep like that.
Well, we haven't talked much specifically about this movie in particular. I think it's a good movie. I think the characters are integrated well. But unfortunately, there's just not a lot to talk about without getting specific. Before we put up that spoiler curtain, Matt, do you have any final thoughts or recommendations as far as Infinity War goes?
this is a common refrain for me, but I think you know if you're going to see Infinity War or not.
Yeah.
If you didn't regret previous Marvel movie ticket purchases, you might as well buy this one. If you liked Guardians of the Galaxy and not the other ones, you might as well buy this one because it does integrate that Guardians Thor Ragnarok world pretty well. What else can I say that's pretty spoiler? A lot of standouts here. I actually thought Thanos was so good that I actually felt some empathy for a genocidal Russian weightlifter who was purple. I don't get that design, but that again, that's a throwback to the original comics.
Mm.
He doesn't look related to, and I realize they're scruffy alien orphans. He doesn't look like he's from the same school of design as his underlings. That's a quiffle.
Yeah.
But I
did like the overall design of his adopted children, though. I think they all looked really cool.
Yeah.
Almost right out like a Star Wars cantina level of just like, wow, that dude looks awesome.
The telekinetic guy that was kind of a gray alien and the giant ram's horned Amazon lady, they were both kind of particularly
It looked like somebody just walked off the page of a comic book. Didn't look ridiculous after the transformation. It was really effective. I would highly recommend this one, too. You know if you're on board for this. Again, I would not jump on board here. I think at this point, the Marvel train has left the station. Luckily, we have an entire library to catch you up. But if you haven't done that by now, this is not the one to, like, come in midstream. I don't think anybody who doesn't have a working knowledge of at least most of these characters are going to have a lot to take away with it, because they really do dispense with a lot of exposition because you've had it for 10 years. It really is just like, okay, you know these characters, you know what they do, you know what they're like. Here's the situation. Let's drop them in and go. And it really just starts going and does not stop for 2 hours and 40 minutes. But I think with that note, we're going to raise that spoiler curtain. Matt, do you want to hit the button?
I shall. I shall give it a mighty boop.
Thanos demands silence. Go no further. There be spoilers here.
So, Matt, let's talk about it. What worked for you? What didn't?
I would say the vast majority of it did, in fact, work for me. I was pretty okay with this. I mean, I could deal on it a little bit. Thanos' design mystifies me. I just don't know why there's a particular...
okay, yeah, you kind of hinted at this earlier. Yeah. What is the actual complaint you have here?
Just why, with all of his logistical and metaphysical power, does he just look like a thick Russian weightlifter dude? But I guess that is arguably part of his character, is that he's actually very utilitarian. So he's not super into ornamentation and vanity, and he's just a guy that wears t-shirts and jeans like Bill Gates, you know. I mean, his effect is pretty good. There's something about when you have a large character with normal proportions that makes it difficult to integrate into the CGI. They beat that here with several of the children of Thanos, the big, thin hobgoblin guy and his female counterpart. They both look really present in the world, and they affect the grass and affect the light, right? Thanos, his body gets rough in a couple spots. There's one in particular where he picks somebody up by the throat, and like you could sort of tell that the guy's on a... So some of his interactions, his short, brutal fight with the Hulk was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But that was CGI on CGI crime, you know. But his facial realization and stuff was great. Like you really got a depth of expression out of him that I think I would put up there with Gollum.
Well, it's like I was saying earlier, you can see Josh Brolin's performance bleeding through that special effect.
And this is, again, these are mostly quibbles and not real complaints. I thought the open field combat in Wakanda was almost transparently shot at the same time as the end of Black Panther. Like, it was really the same place.
Yeah, it did feel a little derivative. And when I watched Black Panther, I was kind of, do not take this the wrong way. This is not a criticism. It's just, it is the feeling that was evoked when I was watching it. Is it reminded me a lot of the battle sequence at the end of Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace, which is another kind of grasslands, plains, people with high-tech spears and melee weapons up against, you know, the laser fighting, you know, big guys. And so I don't want to say it was derivative, but it kind of called back to that for me. And then to see it again in the first movie that we have seen since Black Panther, it did feel just a tad derivative.
The other thing I will say, and this is a deep cut, and it may not be so, it could be a case of parallel thought, but those things they brought with them were gene stealers, man. They were a 40K guy.
Oh my God, they are.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, cool. you said that these are minor quibbles. I guess my next question is going to be, what did work for you? But I think I'm going to prompt you here. We had upwards of 20 main characters in this, or 20 characters that you could say would be featured main characters. I don't think there's any one protagonist here. Were they able to balance that well?
Yeah, I think they did an extraordinarily, I would say unprecedented job of juggling all the people in this.
I agree. Now, I don't think it was a flawless job, but I think asking for a flawless job, especially in a movie like this, you're asking a lot.
Well, and since we are now behind the spoiler curtain, I will say this. The person I think got shorted the most was Vision, and I think that's going to be important later and for reasons.
And I'm a big Vision fan. You know, when I was saying, like, yeah, I kind of read the X books in the 90s, and he was the one Avenger that I kind of keyed into, not necessarily early. It was probably in my 20s, but I read a couple of collected trades of the Vision, and I'm like, hey, this guy is actually really cool. Shout out to Chris, friend of the podcast, my former roommate, who actually introduced me to books that did not have X in the title. I think probably the Hulk got a little bit of the short stick just because he had that one big fight with Thanos, and then he's not in the rest of the movie. However, we do get Mark Ruffalo, so that's a good trade. Unfortunately, Mark Ruffalo spends most of the time in the big fight wearing the Hulkbuster armor, so we still don't get to see a lot of Mark Ruffalo. But if you are a Hulk fan, you might have had to have gotten your dose during Thor Ragnarok. Which there was some pretty quality Hulk in there. But I think he kind of got the short end of the stick. And I'm actually going to say that Star-Lord / Peter Quill, he's got some good screen time. His character was not deftly handled, though. For me, he felt really superficial and kind of non-complexly motivated, as he has been in the past. So I thought that was a short stick thing there. But again, minor quibbles. Overall, they did the impossible. They took 20 main characters, put them in a film, gave them a decent amount of screen time, and it mostly came off. This is not something I could have done. It's not something I think anybody I know could have done. So it really was interesting to see them pull it off as well as they did.
What got me is splitting it out, the scopes of the Marvel Universe. You have the street levels, you have the cosmic, and then you have sort of the in-between, and sort of the Avengers then sort of straddles all three. They did a really good job of bringing that off.
We kind of cordoned off or sectioned off a group of characters and teamed them up with some other folks. So we've got Spider-Man's palling around with Tony Stark, and they're doing this thing over here. You've got Thor palling around with the Guardians of the Galaxy. They're in space taking care of business up there. You've got the people in Wakanda taking care of things there with Steve Rogers and Bucky and those guys. It's like, okay, everybody team up, and then we're going to take your stories individually. And then here's where it plays well, is they paced it well. They never left you a character alone for too long. They didn't dwell on any one character for too much. They couldn't have. There's just no time for it in this movie. But overall, this movie is a really great action film. It's a really good slobber knocker battle. You're going to see your favorite characters do some cool stuff, provided that your favorite characters don't include Hawkeye or Ant-Man or the Hulk. You know, they do it really well, but as an action movie, how is the gravitas here, Matt? Do you think, because the last few Marvel movies we've had have had kind of a good underbelly of subtext. You know, Black Panther it's saying some things about politics and race relations and things like that. At least my read is that we don't get a ton of that in Infinity War. How do you think it played?
I think Infinity War does a good job of having stakes. We've sort of figured out that we're working in a context where these characters can be hurt. So nobody in Infinity War feels invincible, and they do that because they do such a good job early, and I believe it's why they did what they did with the Hulk. There's always been this deus ex machina. We have a Hulk. We'll just use the Hulk. We'll just turn the Hulk loose on him, and he's just like, all right, I'm going to handle the Hulk. Now what? I just bitch slapped the Hulk. The Hulk won't come back out. Now, what's next? Who else you got? I strongly defend that because I think it took the escape hatch out of the movie. And it was also a pleasing sort of reversal to see Hulk get the puny god treatment.
Yeah.
It also sort of harkens back to the classical message of whenever you're working in the Cosmoverse, you have the whole, how does this planet collect all the Infinity Stones? How does this planet repulse Galacticus? Or Galactus. and it's like, Galactagus? He's a 500-foot trucker, Galactagus. But I think what you're dealing with is they almost preyed on the fun of Thor Ragnarok. First thing that we see the Thanosians do is they deal with Hulk, and then they deal with a bunch of Asgardians.
Yeah.
Right? That's their screen intro.
Which does not end well for a fan favorite.
Yeah. And so I think sets up early the thesis that the Infinity War will be a feat of teamwork. We're not just going to have our big slugger and their big slugger, that we're going to have to use everybody's abilities. We're going to have to get tricky with every last little drop we have in the tank. And they go like right to the end, like Tony Stark's about to die. A few people do die.
Mm-hmm.
Now we can at least do the real synopsis, which is in the Marvel Universe, there are 6 Infinity Stones that each cover, they're basically Captain Planet's rings. They each cover an aspect of reality. If you assemble them all in one place, you can put them into this thing called the Infinity Gauntlet, and essentially you can then be the ultimate genocidal Captain Planet. And we have a very strange villain, Thanos, who is essentially an eco-terrorist. He believes that if fecundity is slowly exhausting the universe, and that if he can have the populations of places, he eliminates poverty, eliminates suffering, and makes them more utopian. In the comics, there's this other subplot where he is in love with the female personification of death in the MCU.
Mm-hmm.
He's from the sort of darker, edgier, cringier pocket of the Marvel Universe that kind of flourished in the 90s. She didn't make it into this. I thought they might have a nod to her in a flashback, you know, when Thanos has that near-death experience.
Yeah, she she would have been a hard character to introduce without, like, a pretty solid origin, I think.
Well, or significantly altering her basic design and, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought a female Reaper figure might speak with them, you know, but I didn't think it would be Lady Death from the comics, who is kind of, she's barely PG-13.
I almost kind of like that they did it this way and didn't do like this kind of jilted lover looking to impress a woman thing. Because as you mentioned earlier, it really gives Thanos a pathos. Honestly, that's where the depth comes in for me here. You know, just to throw out another example, you take a look at Civil War, and Civil War has got some real political allegory to kind of pull from, and it's talking about some issues. You don't really get that here, but with Thanos, you kind of do. And Thanos is almost too sympathetic. Like, you don't necessarily agree with what he's doing, but he makes a pretty good case for it.
Well, and the other thing about, like, you know, calling back briefly to our last episode where Walter talks about the worthy opponent, man. You know? There is something about Thanos that is so successfully committed and so successfully martial that you're sort of like, you got to give him a bro nod at certain points. Well, damn, that's a bad dude. Seems sad, you know? Yeah.
Once again, I think it's got a lot more gravitas than, say, Age of Ultron or even the first Avengers movie. As far as being a well-made movie, I think all of the effects came off pretty well. The only one that really hung me up was any time they had Mark Ruffalo take the dome off the Hulkbuster armor, his head is just kind of weirdly floating there, and it doesn't look right. His head is painted in weird. It doesn't look like his head is in the same place as the rest of the actors. There was a few problems, like I had that in Black Panther 2, where it's all the people standing on the cliffside and they look really superimposed on there, because they are. But again, that's a small quibble. I mean, overall, they took Josh Brolin, turned him into a giant 10-foot-tall grimace and made it work and made him a relatable character, and they do a really good job here. I think the action is shot well. I think it's written well. Kind of a deftly handled movie. It was not the best in any of these avenues, but it was enough that it sold and didn't take me out of the film.
I've mentioned before that the effects buy-in is a question of more uniformity than anything else. Like, we'll always believe in effects if a movie looks consistent. You know, if everything in it is a rubber effect, so much the better. Even if everything in it is CGI, you can get away with it. Like, I think that's why the cosmic movies work so well, is because they are painted into a painted world.
Mm-hmm.
You get a Battlestar Galactica or The Expanse, where they're not dropping that much money per se on sets and stuff, but it's gone. A certain look is held so consistently that it works. And that's easily broken in these globetrotting movies. Like, something that looks great on Thanos' orange planet might not look great against green grass. It's very challenging, and I have a lot of sympathy for it. By and large, most of this worked. Even the redesigns on the returning characters. Like, I like the slightly scruffier Cap.
Bring back that beard, man. Heck yeah.
We got to see a little more of what the War Machine and Falcon suits could do. You know, there's something to be said for guns and bombs. They do things.
Yeah. Let's do a kind of circle back here and talk about the stakes, because the end of this movie is a cliffhanger, and some motherfuckers die in this. I guess that's our big spoiler, is that Thanos wins. He does exactly what he wants and then rides off into the sunset.
Literally does what he wants and then literally rides off into the sunset. At one point, somebody says, "What are you going to do after you've killed half the universe?" And he says, "I'm going to sit down for the first time in centuries, and I'm going to watch the sun come up over a grateful world." And like Bob Ross, just like, that's good.
Yeah. But with half the population of the universe, we lose half of our Avengers. And most of them are the new Avengers. You know, we've got our core cast from the OG movies, they were all untouched. We lose Spider-Man. We lose Vision. We lose Scarlet Witch.
Vision died. I don't know what you'd say. He died conventionally. He actually dies in the final fight. People in my showing were traumatized, because when all the removed people just dissolve into dust, kind of.
Yeah.
Humanely, everybody watching, everybody like just fall apart and disappear, and everybody be confused by it. It's a pretty horrific scene. It's not as horrific as when Thanos uses the Reality Stone on the Guardians.
No, and it's number one. I think Vision is probably the death that hit me the hardest. Like I said, he's a character that I've been looking forward to. I really like it when they use him. I don't think he was showcased necessarily especially well here as a hero. But they did give him some good stuff to chew on. And I started thinking to myself, it's like, man, it's weird that that's the one they went to. Because everybody was expecting somebody to die in this movie. It's like, man, it's really weird that they went to Vision. He's only been in 3 films. But then it occurs to me, no, he hasn't. He's been in a bunch of them. If you go back to Jarvis, when Paul Bettany was voicing Jarvis, the AI that Tony Stark uses, he's been kind of with the company the whole time. That's why I think it kind of punched for me. Not only do I like Vision, but, he is a familiar voice in this series. And then the other one that punches me is Loki. Fan favorite Loki, who also dies kind of outside of the grand slaughter at the end. Thanos breaks his neck at the beginning of the film, which I think a lot of people kind of pretty injured by.
It's ultimately not binding on someone who is the god of mischief, but Thanos even does make the statement, "No resurrections this time," as he does it.
Yeah, well, and then Thor even says, you know, it's like, well, he's died before, but I think it's for real this time.
The first really real pathos we ever see from Thor.
Yeah, yeah.
Where Thor at one point, who's he talking? Is he talking to Drax? Or no, he's talking to Rocket. He sits down and he says, "I'm 1,507 years old, and I've done this the whole time, and now it's all going to be for nothing."
Yeah. Well, and Rocket was a surprising well of gravitas in the Guardians of the Galaxy 2, and he kind of serves in that function here as a foil to Thor. I'm going to say it just because of who they decided to axe at the end. Like, Tom Holland is coming back for a sequel, so this isn't permanent. So for me, that kind of relieved the stakes a little bit, because that this can't be permanent. Now, I think Vision is probably dead. I think Loki is probably dead. If not, I'm looking forward to the pleasant surprise of being wrong. But I know some of these characters that died at the end of this movie are coming back. just because I know they have movies coming up. And so it's like, well, yeah, I guess.
But I've also read that the forthcoming Captain Marvel movie is a prequel that backs up in time.
Yeah.
It's not a Captain Marvel prequel, but it is set before Infinity War.
Right, right.
So then there'll be a Captain Marvel standalone movie, and then she will be in the Infinity War follow-up.
Well, and it makes sense, too, like, why we haven't seen Spider-Man pop up in the Venom trailers yet. Odds are he's not there. But I also hear that Infinity War 2, or Avengers 4, whatever you want to call it, is supposed to pick up right where this one leaves off. At least that's what I've heard. They make the movies. They can do whatever the hell they want with them. But at this point, it's supposition. However, my full reaction to Infinity War is going to depend on how deftly they handle the recovery on this. If it's just a matter of Scarlet Witch trying really hard and then she rewinds time a la, like, House of M, that's going to upset me a little bit. But if they actually have a clever way of getting themselves out of this situation, it's really going to pay off, and I'm really going to enjoy that.
Well, I told you my theory off the mic. Should I repeat it?
Yeah, go ahead. This is Matt's fan canon theory.
This is where I'm putting my money on the betting board, okay. Right? The final set piece of Infinity War is a pitched battle in Wakanda, because they go to Wakanda sort of as a fallback and also to access some technology there, pick up Bucky, get him a new vibranium arm, get Cap some new Wakandan shields. Another thing I picked up on, I don't know if I noticed this in Black Panther, but the other tribe in Wakanda, the Gorilla Totem tribe guys, they only use wooden. They don't have any metal at all. And it finally occurred to me that that's like a conscious protest against the T'Challa's faction. They don't need the vibranium crutch. Anyway, so they have a pitched battle outside the gates of Wakanda, not unlike the end of Black Panther. We do get to see the Wakandan sort of stylistically maybe old school, but with technological cores. Their shields have force fields in them. Their spears fire blasts in an alternative mode, you know. We get that stuff is showcased even a little better maybe than it was in Black Panther. But the whole canard of the set piece is that Shuri, the younger sister of T'Challa that makes all the Black Panther equipment, played by Letitia Wright, she is trying to remove the Infinity Stone from Vision's head. And so they are up in a med bay trying to do that, which is a very sticky procedure. The entire pitch battle outside is to buy her time. And then eventually what happens is one of the children of Thanos slips in to the building sort of stealthily, and the Vision has to get up off the table, defend her, defend himself, and they go rolling down the side of the building and join the scrum down below. And so I have a theory that they got the stone out, and that either the Vision or the stone in his head at the time will turn out to have been a ringer.
The whites, dude.
And of course, part of what happens here is that eventually there comes a point where Doctor Strange sort of gives over the time stone, which is in his amulet all along, where it's set up that this is that he can't do this, that this is the one thing he can't do, and then he does it because he says it's the only way he sees where they win. He looks at, what does he say, 16 million in 5 realities and sees only one where they survive.
Yeah.
And so I think what's going to happen is that when they gave him a ringer stone, and I think what's going to happen is that when he snapped his fingers, and nobody knows except Vision and Strange, and maybe Shuri, right?
Uh-huh.
So what happens is when Thanos snaps his fingers, all the people that quote-unquote died, he split it into two timelines, so they saw everybody else die. So there's two worlds that each have, you know, half the universe's population and a content Thanos in them.
Hmm.
Then they will at some point reestablish inter-multiversal communication and assassinate the twin happy Thanai.
Huh. That would be interesting. It would introduce the multiverse and could ostensibly get some of our Fox characters into the Disney canon, but... Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where they go with it.
That's how I'd write my way out of it, which is maybe...
I have not thought about it that much. I apologize, I do not have my own theory to bring to the table. But I did want to talk about, before we close things out, some of the things that are upcoming for Marvel at its various studios and properties. Upcoming this year, we've got Ant-Man and the Wasp. I hate to say it, I love Paul Rudd. I love his take on the character. Ant-Man just was not a huge deal for me. It was a fun afternoon to spend at the movies, but really it felt like just another Iron Man movie where we put a guy in a cool suit and he does cool suit things. The trailers for Ant-Man and the Wasp kind of look like more cool things in cool suits, but I'm hoping we get more. If nothing else, looks very funny, so I will see it on that. That's coming out from Disney MCU. We've also got Sony doing their Spider-Verse Venom this October as a Halloween release. And then we've got, and I had no idea this was happening. I had no idea this was coming. We've got Into the Spider-Verse coming from Sony, which is featuring Miles Morales as the Chief Spider-Man interacting with all of the expanded Spider-Man multiverse characters. And Miles Morales in and of himself was he was part of the Ultimate Marvel Universe, who took over the Spider-Man mantle for Peter Parker. And he is a person of color and was a fan favorite when they were talking about doing Spider-Man Homecoming, say, hey, listen, we've already had two Peter Parkers. How about we get a Miles Morales in here? And it looks like Sony is at least doing that in one fashion or another through this animated film. You've got also coming out from the Spider-Verse camp, Silver and Black, which is going to be the Silver Sable Black Cat film. You've also got in 2019 coming out Dark Phoenix as part of the X-Men saga. I thought we had kind of covered that ground already, but apparently we are going back to the Dark Phoenix well.
I think Dark Phoenix was handled clumsily enough in X-Men 3 that we're entitled to a do-over.
Okay, I'll give it to you. And then we've got Captain Marvel, of course, with Brie Larson, speaking of people who were in Room and not The Room. That's coming out from Disney MCU in 2019. We've also got in 2019 the follow-up to this film, the Untitled Avengers Infinity War follow-up. And then we've got Gambit coming from the Fox X-Men camp also in 2019. Plus, we've got Spider-Man Homecoming 2 coming out in 2019. I don't know if that's a Disney Marvel co-production or if that's just Sony. I have lost track on where that is. We've also got New Mutants coming out from Fox X-Men in 2019. Then in 2020, we've got Guardians of the Galaxy from Disney. And then we've also got several Disney MCU movies that have been announced but have not been given release dates. In Black Panther 2, Doctor Strange 2, and About Goddamn Time, Black Widow. We also have from Fox X-Men coming up down the pike a Logan spinoff with X-23. So, I hope you're not getting comic book fatigue because we've got at least another 4 years of this. So, strap in. It should be a good ride.
You mean this isn't actually the war to end all wars?
Apparently not. But I will say that the grand Marvel 10-year experiment up to this point has been pretty well a rousing success.
By the time it's all over, I'm going to have enough collector's vinyl cups for a Russian wedding. Russian weddings are bigger and involve more drinking. That's part of the joke.
All right, Matt. Well, any final thoughts on Marvel's Infinity War featuring the Avengers?
I don't know, man. You hate to be Team Thanos, but have you seen Traffic?
Yeah. I will say they may. I mean, I'm not Team Thanos, but he presents well as believing in what he's doing. You don't necessarily believe it, but you really, it's just a difference between cultures at that point and how you value things objectively. And so they did a really good job with that.
He sells so well the idea that he doesn't even really, I don't even really want to do any of this. You know, it's just sat down, thought about it. So it's got to be. I don't get anything out of it. You know, I don't exalt in it. And maybe that is why his appearance is so. But why he's just a dude in a tank top. You know, because like and somehow that notion of that additional little injection makes him even worse because he's just like, I'm not like doing this to be the Dark Lord of Creation. It's just means to an end. I'm really more of a. I don't know. I just have this goal, you know. And one thing we glossed over entirely is what he is willing to do to get to the goal and what it reveals about him.
Oh yeah, I mean that's where his pathos comes from, is the fact that he shows a deep moment of personal sacrifice and vulnerability in achieving this goal. And it's not a greedy goal. He feels that he is doing the right thing, you know.
You can get political with it. You can see a lot of Stalin in Thanos, for sure.
Yeah. All right, Matt. Well, I think that's about going to wrap it up for this conversation on Infinity War. I hope we weren't too spoilery when we were spoilery, and I hope we weren't too vague when we were vague. But such is the thing with these movies. Feel the need to talk about this one. It seemed like kind of a big deal. So thanks for joining us. Matt, anything you want to say before you close out the episode?
I guess not.
What I will say is, as part of our tradition, Infinity War, should it be remade? No, I'm kidding. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to wrap it up.
Not yet. Definitely not till Monday.
All right, folks. Well, that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Nighthawks podcast. Check us out on Stitcher. Check us out on iTunes. Check us out on the podcast service of your choosing. And when you do so, you'd be doing us a huge solid if you left us a rating and a review. And hit that little old subscribe button. Other than that, I think we're going to settle in for that last cup of coffee and slice of pie. Pay our bill here. As always, with me is you. We should say your name right now.
Is me?
Yeah, you.
Is me?
What's your name?
Matt.
Yeah.
Matt Foster.
With me, as always, is Matt Foster. I'm Trevor Teacher-Hio. We're going to sign off because it's...
Gadabout. Gadabout. Relic Hunter. And Man About Town, Trevor Teacher-Hio.
Oh, God bless you. We're going to sign off because it's almost morning.
See ya. Bye. We love you guys. Give us 5 stars.